Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. We hope you're setting a dial, and lots of new folks out on YouTube and Nouveau Oriole fans and youngins coming in here to yell at the old fart who feels like he's seen it all now that he's seen ownership change here in Baltimore. We're going to be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour back out on the road. My guest that's about to come on the program would be a great, great person to join me at Fadley's on the 12th or at Costas on the 9th. We're going to be over Costas on Tuesday talking about the bridge tragedy on the peninsula and the place where I'm from. And that's going to be on Tuesday morning. And we're going to do that right up until the game starts. Orioles play the Red Sox at 2 o'clock on the 9th. Come on over to Costas. I'll have some 10 times the cash. I think by the time we get the Fadley's on Fridays, I will have the Pac-Man giveaways from the Maryland Lottery. We'll be there live from 2 until 5, actually doing live radio because I'm out of my mind and I don't like to pee in the afternoons during live radio. As I get older, it gets a little more difficult. We are celebrating 25 years of WNST. We're celebrating 40 years of my media career, and I met this guy 39 and a half years ago at least. One of the stories that I wrote for the Baltimore News American, so we're going way back, is when I met this guy at a Flyers Caps game after the loss of Pelly Lindbergh. We're going back 40 years now, and I'm doing a documentary along with Greg Landry at Blue Rock Productions. This guy is a part of it because he was a long part of our WNST heritage and covering ice hockey on Frozen Pond with the Washington Capitals, who one time said they were Baltimore's franchise and then won a Stanley Cup and ignored us. The owner's trying to move the team even further into Virginia, and that's not gone well. Ed Frankovic was not in Las Vegas the night that the Stanley Cup was hoisted. My wife sat in for him. He regrets it, but still had a long, illustrious career as a journalist. In the days of Micah Buchdahl and Lou Corletto and Blue Ice at the Capitol Center parking in the Eagle lot, or was it the Freedom lot? I'm not sure. Ed Frankovic joins us now from parts unknown in Howard County. He has a real life and a real job that we don't talk about, and a family that we love to talk hockey with. And dude, I'm reaching to every lost soul I have, people like you, that we probably – had Bill DeWitt owned the baseball team the last 30 years, you probably would have been the alternate baseball reporter through time. I met you through the media space. Your father was a reporter. You were a reporter. And boy, how times have changed and the Orioles are sold. And I thought, I'm going to check in with Ed and see how many hockey games he's watching lately.
Yeah, watching a lot of hockey and caught a little Orioles magic on Monday night. So, when I got the text from WNST.net, and got to be on that text service because you get the news first, everybody. When you sent the text that the ownership had changed, I was like, wow, finally. I mean, it's been, 19 or 18 years? Yeah, my daughter was 2 months old. She's going to be 18 in July when we did the Free the Birds at the stadium. We marched out at 5:08. I still have my T-shirt. And I was, to be honest with you, Ness, coming into the season, I was like, I wasn't excited about it because I'm like, you know, they may be good. They got a really good young team, but he's just going to sell it off. He's not going to invest in the team. He's not going to do what needs to do to build a winner like we used to have when I was growing up in the days of Merv Rettman and Don Buford and Paul Blair and all these great Orioles from way back. And, but you know, when the text came in and it was official, and then you said that Cal Ripken was part of the group, suddenly I was back. I was back interested in Baltimore baseball big time.
Yeah, I'm trying to gauge it for everyone because, man, I don't know anybody that loves sports more than you and me. And when I go back and I do this 40th sort of anniversary of being in media and in Baltimore, and I go back to wearing my orange jersey and running down the street in my underwear because we got a football team. And now I see the creep that runs the PR for the Ravens who stands up in front of the reporters and tries to intimidate them. And I had the owner of the football team literally run from me with the general manager. They literally ran from me on a veranda at the Ritz-Carlton at 11:30 last Monday night while people like Jim Harbaugh were stopping and hugging me and Joe Ortiz were stopping and Mike Tomlin and John Fox. It's just unbelievable how full circle all of this has come. I have yet to meet David Rubenstein. I did meet Michael Arrighetti, on opening day. I have reached to a representative. People keep asking, am I getting my media credentials back? And I'm like, if these people are legitimate people, I'll be welcome with open arms as a media member. If they have something to hide and they want to operate the way the other people operated, if that's the way they choose to operate. I mean, the other guy bought the team for $170 million, which is a fake number, and sold it for $1.7 billion, which is not a fake number. And they're getting $600 million from our government. That's not a fake number. And you're paying for that in Howard County. I'm paying for that in Baltimore County. Everybody everywhere is paying for these stadia and these teams. We've really changed the level of obligation from a media standpoint on what we expect from the people who just are so filthy wealthy that they drink off of this and run from reporters that they know full well are there to ask legitimate questions because they can.
It's disappointing. Journalism is not what it was when you and I got started in it. It's a dirty business. It's a money business now. You're basically paid to support the team. We've known this for years with, you know, we saw it with the Orioles. And unfortunately, with Art Modell, we thought, you know, it was legit. And it started that way with Steve. And it's just gone downhill. I saw it with the Capitals. Ted Leonsis tried to build his brand, and he did a good job of it. And he won a Stanley Cup, and then his media became a little bit of over the top, controlling what you wanted to say. And that was it for me, right? If I can't say what I want to say, I'm a full believer in the First Amendment. If you can't have freedom of speech, what's the point, right? I'm not going to waste my time promoting your product.
Well, you don't go to the games anymore, and you know hockey specifically. And I don't want to get off my lawn, but there's a level of whom much is given, much is expected, and I don't know that we've lowered the bar dramatically. And Rubenstein's coming in at a point where for this franchise, having people like you and me back, giving them money and being in the club and being a part of it and telling everyone else to get in the club and recruiting people to go back to the games. You know, I told Mr. Rubenstein's representative this on the club level on opening day. I said, look around, it's full. It'll be empty here on Saturday. It'll be empty on Sunday. It'll be empty on Monday. The kids are in school. You're starting games at 6:30. People can't get there from Bel Air or Ellicott City at 6:30. And people don't like coming into the city. That's not me. I don't mind. I don't feel like I'm going to get shot or killed or all the crap that Fox 45 is peddling. And now the Baltimore Sun's going to be peddling. The future of the franchise and the future of the city are interlocked. They're interwoven because you saw the stadium come online 32 years ago, like I did, and it changed the city. It changed the way we felt about the city. And the baseball team could be a real catalyst in that, in a way that John Angelos and the Angelos family had no ability. They had no ability to communicate. They had no ability to be kind. They had no ability to be accountable. They had no integrity. They were liars, all of them. They were awful people. And it can be called that one way or another, but the remnants of that are he hired Mike Elias. The team's really good. The team's worth going to see, right? But somehow Westberg has a walk-off on a 55-degree night. And, you know, it looked like there were 7,000 people there. And, you know, 10,000, whatever there were, there's plenty of room for Ed Frankovic's family and Nestor Aparicio's family and my neighbors and my friends, but none of us have been invited. As a matter of fact, smart people, educated people, journalists, people connected to journalists, understood what was going on there long before Rock Cabaco took a job there and Masson was made and they started, Tom Davis became sitting in the owners, but like all the people that used to be journalists became employees. Rob right. Long, Jason Lockenfield, go down the line. People I gave in careers to. And usurping media and not having any questions. And if Rubenstein wants to go on with that, the road is laid for that. But I don't know that they can be the franchise that they want to be. And this is where when I talk grown-up-ish about this, Ed, and I bring grown-ups on like you about it, the real story here for them is affording the best players and whether they're going to be a Tampa Bay market, be a poverty franchise and say, we don't have a bridge, we don't have fans, you know, African Americans don't want to come, Hispanics don't want to come after they've thrown the only Hispanic in the history of Baltimore sports media, I'm the only Hispanic to ever do anything, and I've been thrown out for 18 years. And they're dallying as to whether I should be welcomed back in, asking people like TJ Brightman and Greg Bader whether I'm worthy or not. Like, it's insane. But that being said, they need to get everybody back. And in order to sign Adley Rutschman and in order to sign Gunnar Henderson, they need money from me and you and everybody else to buy their app, to whatever the club's going to be. I keep calling it the club because that's really what it's going to be. It's going to be an affinity club. And I said to my wife, even watching the Westberg walk-off the other night, because she has Verizon friends that are like, they're not watching the games because they're not paying the premium and cable television, and they're, you know, old white folks don't like streaming. I'm one of them. I don't have any Netflix. I don't have any Spotify. I don't have any Apple TV. I don't have any of that. I don't pay for any of that. My wife buys cable TV, so I the games are on, right? And I don't care what I pay, I guess. But if I knew what I paid, I'd probably care a whole lot more. But the Orioles are going to need to be a different kind of business. And you've been a hockey guy your whole life. Hockey's always been the fight club that only hockey people are in, non-hockey people, and we all have them, don't get it. They love wrestling, they love baseball, they love football, but they don't get hockey. Luke Jones could care less about hockey. He's been my friend 15 years. Doesn't know a puck from a truck. Doesn't care to know and will never know and doesn't get the channel and isn't tuned in and doesn't follow hockey things and hockey people. The baseball team needs to hit the nerve center of our community again. And in order to do that, they need to be so much better than they were. And I hope they are. And that's my wish and my prayer for David Rubenstein. And I'm going to write to him and just say, you have no idea how traumatized and terrorized thinking people have been here in regard to giving the baseball team their money.
Right. I mean, when the football team left, and you and I remember that well, I was a freshman at Maryland, and the Mayflower Chucks took them to Indianapolis. This beloved
I still have this, football. By the way. I still, yeah. This is my belt buckle. Still have it.
Yeah, I love it. The beloved Baltimore Colts, and they made a movie about it, Diner, for those of you who, you know, old movie, great movie. I know you love that one too. And the city rallied around the baseball team. The baseball team became the focus. I remember clearly me and my buddies going down to Jamaica. And when I was 26 years old, 1991, these guys were from Chicago, big baseball town, Cubs, White Sox. These guys said to us, you guys got the baseball, right? Because this whole city rallied around that baseball team when the football team left. And Cal Ripken was, you know, in his prime, 91 was his MVP year. And the team would go, they'd have big years in what, 96 and 97 in the playoffs. I mean,
but the Renaissance was really around the stadium, not around the team, because the team wasn't very good. 89, they had a punch, but there were no wild cards, any of that stuff. I mean, the Orioles were really good in 79, 80, 81, 83, then 89. And then not again until 96. So like in that period of time where we all loved the Orioles, they weren't great. I mean, they really weren't.
No, they weren't. And you know, the farm team had rotted, right? I mean, that was one of the big problems. When you and I were growing up in the 70s, they always had guys to bring up. They were coming up from Rochester. They invested in the farm team. And it was clear they started rotting that. And I don't know when that happened. I know Hofberger sold them to what? To Bennett Williams. And then Bennett Williams was a big free agency guy. And then, you know, you had another owner in there. I forget the name. And then it went to
Eli Jacobs.
Yep, Jacobs. That's right.
I write books about this stuff. I tried to tell the Rubenstein guy that. I know this stuff. Yeah, a little bit.
And then, you know, you're right. It was the stadium. But there was also Cal, right? The streak. We had the streak to get us through those years, right? 94, 95.
But the stadium was designed for the city, not to enrich the ownership. I mean, the fact that the Angelos family, that he's on a beach on Instagram with $1.7 billion after wrecking the franchise. You know, like literally what I told the Rubenstein is, you wrecked the franchise. What you see here is a shell. It was burned to the ground, and the team was so bad, and he hired Elias, and this thing's been good for 15 minutes. This thing's been in the oven for a year and a half, mm-hmm. being decent again after being moribund. So you literally are starting from scratch again, and how you engage this is, I mean, let me ask you, Ed, how old are your kids now? Because I lose track. You and Gary, you have so many of them, and they're all on ice skates, and you're freezing your ass off in a hockey rink like Tom Kapp did with his kid and Jason Dietrich or everybody else whose kid who loved hockey. But give me a recap on your family, because I know your dad had some health issues, but you and your father are corridor buoy people who would have been Washington Senators people. You shared Capitals, Bullets, Georgetown, Maryland, but you love Baltimore. Your father loved the Orioles and the Colts, but you're unique in that way because your family read the Washington Post when you were a kid.
Yeah, we grew up in Laurel, and all my buddies were Redskin fans. We were all Oriole fans because that was the only baseball team. And we would truck up to Memorial Stadium, drive up there to 33rd Street when we got our licenses. And actually, as kids, we would go up. But my dad's from New York, in the New Jersey area, right? He grew up a Yankees fan, huge baseball
I
fan.
forgot that.
And he was a Rangers fan, and that's how he was a hot hockey. He was big in New York up there. So he moved down here. The Capitals didn't come till I was 9. When I was growing up, it was the Orioles. Baseball's first love. Obviously, the Orioles were great. I still remember being in kindergarten, 5 years old, coming home because it was half day kindergarten and watching the Orioles beat the Reds in the World Series when I was 5 years old. I
See,
loved
I don't have
baseball.
those memories. You're a couple years older than me. I was born in 68. So my first memories are 73. My dad took me out to the A's Orioles ALCS. I was there when Palmer pitched against Vida Blue or Hunter, excuse me, Hunter. I have still have the scorecard. My dad kept score that day. And so, I was at 73, 74. Felix Mian, Rusty Staub, Pete Rose, Bud Harrelson, those are my first baseball man. And literally the Rangers being in Texas, but not, I never knew the Washington Senators because that it's 73. It was kind of when I came on board,
Yeah, they were gone. They moved. I remember they moved
So I don't
71
have a
there.
Super Bowl five memory. I don't, or three memory or any Mets, Reds, Pirates. Clemente had died. One of my first memories was Clemente dying. And Hank Aaron hitting the home run in 74. I was watched that live. I mean, I have vivid memories of those baseball moments in 73, 74, Fisk in 75. But I don't have any. I don't have what you have. I don't have the Reds. I have all of that on Major League Baseball films.
And it was Brooks Robinson was unbelievable, right? And I was young, right? I just remember the games were during the day back then. They didn't do night World Series games. But the Orioles were always, what I remember is the Orioles were always good when I was growing up. Every year they had a chance
And
to
your
win a
dad could
World
put you
Series.
in the family roadster and bring you up to a game too.
We went to a lot of games when I was growing up. And the reason we're Colts fans was my dad had season tickets to the Colts. And I was in the stands. Here's another one I'm going to pull out for you. I was at the 44-34 Joe Namath, Johnny Unitas game. It was the first football game I really remember. And it seemed like every time Namath dropped back to pass, it was a bomb to Don Maynard for a touchdown. We were sitting in the upper deck on the third base side of the baseball field. And I still remember that game vividly. It was one of the best football games I've
So
ever
that was
seen.
72. And right, my first game was when Domrus replaced Johnny U.
Johnny.
I told Joe Ortiz this as we talked at the Ritz-Carlton last week. And by the way, Joe Ortiz is welcoming me, wants me to become a Chargers fan now that the Ravens have thrown me out, me and my family. He said they have plenty of room in San Diego. And I told him, I said, you know what? My dad took me to my first football game in September 1973. Stan White sacked Joe Namath, separated his shoulder, but the Colts lost 34-7 or 34-0. It was a, they got their ass kicked. And I have the ticket stub. Every time I see Stan White, I've told that story. It's going to be in the 40th anniversary documentary that Blue Rock Productions and Greg Landry's doing on my career and what we've done. But it's it, you never forget. I sat in the end zone in the temporary seats out in center field in the
Yep, I
grass
sat there
that
for a game.
below where the band was and the pep band and all that stuff. And I remember the uniforms. I remember Ricky Bell catching a touchdown pass in front of me. You just remember John Riggins ran for like 120 yards in that game for the Jets. So, and every time I pointed out, Stan White says, we threw seven interceptions in that game.
Wow.
And I looked
Marty
it up and I'm
Donruss.
like, damn if you didn't. He said, you never forget when you're playing a football game with your team. It was Marty Domrez and a very young Burt Jones. He had just been drafted. So, nonetheless, I remember my first game was Colts Jets too. All and it was 50 years ago. It's amazing all these years later how much We love sports and we mark our lives by sports. But I ask you about your children because you raised hockey kids, right? Like, I don't know if you've taken your kids to a baseball game or whatever. I know you had season tickets below me. I was in section 513 for years. I'd see your jersey. It would say Frankovic across your back above the band. You were like in section 113, like
Correct.
below me, right? And I clearly, Chad Steele, you can go read up on all the awfulness that the Ravens have partaken in trying to put me out of business. But I like, I don't see you at games anymore. We went to a billion hockey games together. What's your allegiance to the Orioles and your family? Like, will your kids want to go to a game once or twice a year, or is that just not what they do for baseball?
Yeah, they would. My wife actually worked for one of the Orioles team doctors before, when we first started dating back in the late 90s. But yeah, my wife's grandmother would watch every Orioles game up until she died a few years ago during COVID. And then she didn't die from COVID, but she was just old at 93. But yeah, we would go. I mean, my company has done a couple games. We did Oriole games. They did an Oriole game last September. Unfortunately, I was traveling for hockey. I didn't get to go, but we would go. We would go for several games. If we wanted,
See,
right?
this would be a fun thing for me to do with you, right? So I keep thinking to myself, now that Angelos doesn't own the team, reason I'm reaching people like you, like Chris Pajka and I left the stadium together on opening day. I rode him home. He had a
Wow.
seat in the upper deck. He offered me a seat. I had a club level thing, and I like he sold a seat. His wife was sick. So we didn't go to the game, but I went up in the eighth inning and sat with him. We ended the game. We left the stadium together. Like, I actually was with friends on opening day, and that was. And if you look at any of my pictures, people are like, "You're really smiling." I'm like, "Well, I'm happy. I'm seeing people I love." And one of the things that I told Howard Scherr, and I know you know Howard. Howard was my DJ partner 30 years ago, and Howard comes on once or twice a year. Comes in as a crab cake. He's a duck sucker. He's in the duck sucking business, duck doctors. And Howard's been one of my best friends since we were at Skipjack games together in the 80s. And he even said to me, "I can't believe Barry sat on my lap when he was like this big, and now he's 39 years old." You know, so my son. So Howard and I were together, and we're in a club level, and you know, he had a couple of beers, and we're there, and we're people watching in the fourth inning and watching the game on TV in the club level. And I said to him, "You know, you dirty SOB, if I tried to put a night together with wives to go to dinner, you'd have an excuse. If I had an event and said come, you'd have an excuse. If I said, hey, you want to go to an Oriole game on a random Tuesday night, the weather's nice. Hey, I got my daughter, I got you know, whatever. I can't get people together to do anything." And I said, so on opening day, everybody gathers. It's kind of like being in the beer garden at Heritage Fair. They just show up. So all you got to do is walk around and you'll see everybody that you want to see, but you can't make it like you, people like you. Because if I hit you and I'm like, hey, Ed, we want to go to the game on the 19th and see the Tigers, you'd be like, I got things to do. I got hockey that night. So opening day's like this day where Baltimore people come together and I got to see people, but the Orioles have been a thing in my life the last 20 years. And I told Rubenstein's guy, nobody's ever been nice to me there, ever, ever. It's never been a place I felt welcome. It's never been a place I wanted to leave my money. And really from the time Angelos bought it, I saw the deterioration from Johnny Oates forward because I was a media member and I was there every night and I took the phone calls every day and people would call me to complain. I was their complaint department. And but I want to go back. And I want to be a part of it. And part of going back isn't me and my wife getting the family roadster and going down there and sitting in the cold and doing the seventh inning dance and doing the shell game. Part of it's like going with people we care about and love and want to spend time with, right? Like that's the baseball thing is going, you said me and my friends, we would get together and right? I mean, that's what baseball was. Me and my friends would get on the bus and we go to the games, right?
And I distinctly remember you and I, we were doing a TV show down in PG County with our buddy Bill McCaffrey, God rest his soul. And you had just gotten that day, I remember it. You had gotten a call from the Orioles. They were going to give you money to do some stuff. You remember this?
It
And
was
then
Christmas
they.
time. It was Matt Dreyer. Yes, I remember it well. They actually paid that bill. The next bill they didn't pay.
Right. I remember then they pulled the rug out from under you. And I do remember you did a WNST night against the Phillies. And my wife and I came. We all sat up in the left field. And that's when the bird sprayed you with water that night. I was there that night.
Actually, that wasn't the night. The
Oh, was it
Phillies night
tonight?
was conflating. We had a lot of successful events for them.
Right.
And that shows up in the documentary as well, because there's a lot of evidence of Wild Bill in the upper deck in 2000. WNST fans. The incident happened the night before the Preakness. It happened against the Angels. It was about Vladimir Guerrero. We had sold about 1,400 tickets out in the bleacher seats on that night because Guerrero didn't sign with the Orioles. So this was a giving him a hard time for not coming to Baltimore. That's how provincial we were at that point. That's how pro-Orioles, pro-Baltimore my company always was on behalf of the Orioles and behalf of the town in regard to, you know, people like Chad Steele who didn't even grow up around here or come in here and usurp brands and start telling me what's good for Baltimore. It's hilarious. While they take $600 million of our money and their billionaire guy who pretends to be a nice guy goes running off. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible how much money and how much history and how much love we all have for these brands. And this new owner needs to feel that and know that, and know how many people like you and me are out there that have been dusted by the brand in one way or another. Not everybody was assaulted by the team mascot on a night when a $30,000 bill wasn't paid and then lied to. And I mean, Flanagan died almost sideways with me because of what happened that night. And he was appalled. And he was the one who promised me, quite frankly, shit like that wasn't going to happen anymore. But he wasn't in control of it. He was embarrassed by it. He was mortified. He called me mortified about what happened in 2004 and 2005. And the whole thing came unraveled because they couldn't communicate. Because they have I told their communications guy, Mr. Rubenstein's communications person, I told him, you have an organization here that is just horrific at communicating. Like they with everyone, with sponsors, with friends, with media, they had no communication skills. John Angelos's communication skills were on display last Martin Luther King Day. They were on display when he banned Kevin Brown and thought, and in the end, no one talked about it. You know, no one had Kevin Brown's back inside the organization. None of them. None of them came out loud. I mean, Palmer, McDonald, all those guys could have said, this is bullshit. You know, any of them could have said that. They didn't. Yeah, the only one that ever said it was bullshit was me.
Yeah, and it was bad. And it's just, it's hush money, right? They're all paid. They're afraid of losing their jobs. Again, it goes back to journalism is not
tyranny, terrorization, and trauma. That's what I said. That defines 30 years. That's the way I'll always remember it. And that's not to, you know, God rest Mr. Angelos' soul. He hung on. His kids got wealthy. I mean, at the end of this story, there needs to be something good for my town beyond the next billionaire coming in and spending billionaire money and coming in. At the end of this, it needs to be more than a casino. It needs to be more than an empty stadium. It needs to be more than an empty parking lot that people may or may not want to come to, right? Like all of the things that Peter screwed up, Sports Legends Museum, he destroyed it. Right. Yeah, literally, Peter destroyed it. So, I mean, Peter destroyed the night we were supposed to celebrate the Super Bowl victory. So, Peter was destructive. And I don't mind portraying it in that way because that's the fact. It's a fact. And these are the things that Rubenstein needs to clean up.
So how involved is Ripken going to be? Here's a guy who grew up in this area, right? A local guy. How much say does he have? How much does Cal want this to get back to where it was?
I don't know. I haven't talked to Cal in a long time. I was not at the press conference last week where he and Rubenstein and Westmore, I was not allowed to ask questions. And apparently it was because of the Key Bridge and the governor being there. It was a different kind of press conference than that. Listen, if David Rubenstein's going to be, I know one thing, I'm not going anywhere. I'm going to be here. Right. And if anybody wants to sit, I'm like Mr. Angel. Anybody wants to sit and talk to me, I'm a very available individual. I get crab cake tours. I'm here. I want to educate the public. I want to be educated. I want to feel the integrity. I want to feel the reach. I want to feel the sincerity. I want to feel the community. I feel the business and the need. I respect that. They need to fill the place up to afford Adley Rutschman and Gunnar Henderson. If you want those kinds of players, if you want Corbin Burns here the next 5 years at $160 million, if you want that kind of baseball, we have to do better than 12,000 down there on a 50-degree night at $9 tickets. And I'm afraid of the city. It costs too much money. Like all of that. There needs to be a real level of investment from our community. Otherwise, they're Tampa. And I mean that sincerely.
Right.
I mean,
absolutely. Because the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Red Sox, they print money. They're always going to sell out. They've got their big cable deals. And they always sell at their stadiums, right? Because they want to win. The Orioles model has not been they want to win. It's the Angelos model is we're going to make money at the expense of the city.
And it's all they did. I mean, they made money and stashed mass and money and hid mass and money from the learners and from Major League Baseball, like all along. That's what they did. You can do the math on all of it for what they invested. Now, I will say this, and all respect to Mr. Angelos, and I wrote this in the Peter Principles, he was really upside down. When he was signing Jeff Conine and David Segee and Sidney Ponsone, he was 20, 30 million out of his own pockets into the franchise in the same way that Rubenstein and these guys come in $1.7 billion. If they go giving Gunnar Henderson and these people money and they roll this payroll out to $140 million or $150 million, I don't know that the revenue supports that right now.
Right. They have to.
This doesn't. Like, I mean, I look at the stadium. I look at their – like, Masson printed a lot of money that they hid from themselves, and they had a contract that was just – unbelievable that the more they kept away from the Nationals, the more they had to keep away from the Orioles. It was a poison pill that was destructive. And I think at the heart of it, that's the dirtiest thing they did. And that's the thing I would bring up to Rubenstein if I had an ear to him and say, you know, for 20 years since this network started, every year they tourniqueted how much TV money they would take for themselves. They always took as little as possible, because they had to pay the Nationals as little as possible. And that kept more for the Angelos family to just take that money, just take that cable television money and never have any, it never had anything to do with baseball. So I don't know what happened to all the money. You have to ask John, but there's, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars that were usurped in a profit side of this over the course of the last 20 years, in addition to the $1.7 billion, in addition to that.
So did the Rubenstein, this group, get the Masson 2 in the deal?
Oh, yeah.
Yes,
yeah,
they have
yeah.
it all now.
John Angelos is out of the deal.
Right. So, yeah, because I, like you, I don't have streaming. I do get Comcast Xfinity, and I watch the Orioles games there. Now, I can stream Netflix and stuff like that, but I don't watch hockey games streaming. I watch them, whatever they put on TV, I'll watch them. I'll watch baseball if it's – I'm watching the Orioles again just because the ownership changed, right? I didn't watch many games last year. They were good last year. I didn't watch a lot because I was so ruined on baseball by the ownership. But now that there's a new ownership, there's new hope, if you will. I'm going to watch.
Guys like you and me want to come back. We never wanted to leave. We never wanted to be lied to. We never wanted to be subjected to 115 losses a year. And especially guys like you and me, who were 15, 16, 18 years old as journalists covering professional hockey, interviewing Dr. J after games. Right. And like 40 years later, I cannot be lobotomized into being an idiot to peddle, sit there in an Oriole bird outfit and tell lies to my community. I'm not doing that.
Right.
I'm not. I never was going to do that.
You're the most pro Oriole, pro Raven guy there is, but you weren't going to sit there and just tell them everything was great all the time. Right. I mean, that's what we do. You and I have followed sports for forever. We would point out the good and we wanted them to win, but we would have to point out the bad. That's your job as a journalist, and to ask the questions, to find out what their strategies are, what they're trying to do, where the organization is headed. That's what you do as a journalist. Right. But journalism is not what it was when you and I were growing up in the 80s and doing it. And, you know, I left journalism to go work for the team, and you brought me back in with your website in 2007. But I worked for the Capitals, and we saw the Capitals disintegrate. They moved downtown. I mean, same type of thing. They were begging people to go to the games. It wasn't until, you know, Leontis came in, and he tried to do it with Yager, and that failed. But that ultimately led to Alex Ovechkin. And ultimately, our good buddy Barry Trotz came in 2014 and was, he's a GM now. He was part GM when he came in there with Brian McClellan. And they built a team and they won playoff series after playoff series for 4 years, and they won a Stanley Cup. And he filled his building with Alex Ovechkin and that winning culture. And they haven't won a playoff series since Barry Trotz left. And I know you know that, and I know that. And they're going to be in trouble when Alex Ovechkin wins, when he breaks Gretzky's record. It didn't look like he was going to do it, but he's hot now, and he's probably going to do it if he can keep himself in shape. And what's going to happen after Ovechkin? The Orioles lived off Ripken for years in the streak, right? What's going to happen afterwards? That's where you have to have an organization in place. And, you know, that's what the Orioles didn't have. And we all knew it was Angelos just making money for years. So we tuned it out. I didn't follow it. I mean, I did not follow the Orioles for years. And now I want to come back, right? Now that they have new ownership.
You got your orange shirt on. Look at you, Eddie.
Yeah, I got my WNST golf shirt from circa 2010 here. And
look at that. I don't even own one of those. I don't. Ed Frankovic is here. He was our longtime hockey insider. He has been my media friend for 40 years. He does really important jobs in keeping Americans safe, and also is always at a hockey rink. And after all the years of hockey and sort of cold turkey, and I reached the Trots, I almost went to Nashville today. The Black Crows are opening their tour tonight at the Grand Ole Opry. So I actually literally had a flight today to Nashville. Didn't go. I still never been to the Grand Ole Opry.
Oh, it's gorgeous. Just, you got to go. You got to go.
Yeah. Don't tell me that today. You know, I'm not feeling it because of where I am, workflow and where my mojo is. And I just got back from Florida last week and the Orioles just got sold. But there's quite a story to tell about this community and our love of sports. And now we've had the bridge disaster in the port, all of these things that are concocting and maneuvering. We have the best football team in the sport last year and lost championship game, best baseball team, 101 wins. You know, now there's been an ownership change. There's just a lot for me to process at this point in my career, right? Like, and taking it all in and seeing real change and knowing how long I've waited for this change. And I told Rubenstein's guy, I'm like, you know how long I've waited for you people to come in here and make this thing better? You think I want to be a part of effing it up? You think I want to be anti you after what I've dealt with here? I'm 55 years old. It's Baltimore positive, bro. We're all trying to do the same thing here. Yeah. That guy was a creep, and I always call him a creep. And I don't, alive, dead, whatever. It was awful. It was awful. And I'll never portray it as anything other than what it was. It was awful.
Yeah. I mean, this guy has a great chance. And let's be honest. I mean, there are so many more people in this area, Nestor. I mean, the population has grown a ton. It would be very easy for them to do this right and fill that stadium again. They could do it. They just have to put the effort in. They have to make the connections. Communication. It comes back to what you were saying earlier in our talk. You have to communicate. You have to be out there. You have to reach to people. And you can bring it back. If it's done right, they could do it.
Well, I hope they find some way to do it with some authenticity, and which is what I feel like I would bring to the table if they let me back in. Listen, I ain't begging for a press pass. And Luke has even said, if they let you in, how often will you go? And I, you know what I said? I'm 55 years old, Ed. It depends on how I'm treated.
Right.
Like, literally. Literally. If I'm going to go down there and have TJ Brightman and Greg Bader restrict my access, I'm drinking out of a different water cooler, I'm treated like the guy whose skin's a different color, who they brought in, and I glow green in the corner like a Martian. And I deserve better than that. I've always deserved better than that. I've demanded better than that. And therefore I haven't subjected myself to that. I won't.
Yeah. A lot of these media outlets, like the Capitals, they invest in the Post and they invest in these places. And the coverage for the Capitals, for example, where the Washington Post is compared to back in the day, you and I knew the Bob Fache, right? And they haven't had a really good reporter covering the Capitals since Tariq El-Bashir left. And his kid plays hockey, right? His kid's playing for the Maryland Black Bears down there in Piney Orchard, and he's going to play for Alaska next year. His kid grew up playing hockey, right? Like my kids. And it's just not the same the way it was. They do give these sports franchises give preferential treatment to the companies that they're paying to publicize for them. And it's not like it was back when you and I started out in the 80s. and going to Capitals games, going to Bullet games, Oriole games. It's totally different than it was. It's big money. It's a big business right now. But the Orioles have a chance to expand their business if they do this right. I mean, it's easier for the Ravens because they're 8 games a year, right? At home, you can fill the stadium. And they have a good team. Like you said, they had the best.
You gave your tickets up for the Ravens. You don't go to the Ravens games anymore.
I don't go anymore. I'm too busy with my three kids. And it was just too much to spend a whole Sunday down there. And it's now I don't see many games because I'm usually in a hockey rink on Sundays in the fall. But I did go to the Bengals game, the Thursday night game. I did have tickets.
So you remain a avid Ravens supporter.
Yeah. And it was, they did have the best team. They just choked in the championship. I mean, they picked their bad game. And that's the way it is. We both remember 2012, the game in New England where Lee Evans didn't hold on to the ball and then kind of hit the upright. And we went out, we got Justin Tucker, and the next year we win the Super Bowl. So maybe this loss in the championship this year spurs them to next year, right? But they have to figure out a way like they did to beat Tom Brady back then. And they did have Brady's number pretty good for a franchise. They have to figure out a way to beat Patrick Mahomes next year.
As well as Joe Burrow and some other teams that are going to be coming on as well. So, Ed, I love you, man. I miss you. A ball game. I mean, we watched a million hockey games. Let's go to a Hershey Bears game or so. I don't know. We got to figure something out, right? They won the cup last year.
Yeah, they're going to be in the playoffs. They have a great team down there. Yeah, Hershey Bears. My kids are all about going to Hershey, especially my youngest loves roller coasters. So Hershey is one of his favorite spots.
All right. Well, we're going to have to work something out for something up there other than Hootie and the Blowfish before the summer is over. Ed Frankovic has been my friend for 40 years. He will be featured in the documentary that's coming out. I'm releasing the name of the documentary right now. Ed, do you want to know the name of the documentary?
Absolutely.
No One Listens, Everyone Hears. It's a story of my life, right?
Really is, right? We have one listener, right? For how many years?
No one listens. Yeah, no one listens. So that's coming out. And Ed and I met at the Capitol Center in 1984. I was 16. I just turned 16. It was actually my birthday. And you can see the byline and the birthday and see it was on my 17th birthday that Pelly Lindbergh died. But I had been covering the skipjacks. And so all that stuff's going to be in the movie, all the stuff that you remember over 40 years. But Ed covered the Capitals here for better part of a decade and a half and winning a Stanley Cup. He and I were together in Las Vegas. We were together in all sorts of hockey rinks for years and years and years with Barry Trotz, who's now down in Nashville trying to win their first Stanley Cup. That would be apropos. I do remember, Trotz left, came to Washington, Gent beat cancer in 15, and then the Predators were in the finals. And all I could think about was poor Trotz had to watch the franchise that he was at for 20 years, like kind of like Earl Weaver having to broadcast the 83 World Series after he wasn't in it. It was a little weird. So I hope Trotz gets his cup down in Nashville. They have a chance, right?
Oh, yeah, they had a streak recently. They went 16 wins and two losses in overtime. They're in a nice spot. I think they're going to play Vancouver in the first round. I think they can definitely beat them. Whoever wins the cup this year is going to come out of the Western Conference, Nestor. And there are 6 or 7 teams that can win it.
All right. Well, I'll talk hockey with you next time. I haven't been to a hockey game since the last time I went to a hockey game with you. So that's how long it's been.
It's been a long time. And like I told you, I don't go down to DC anymore. I watch them on TV.
The good old hockey game. It's the best game you can name. Ed Frankovic is still my friend, even after I sing to him. We're going to be out on the road doing the Maryland Crab Cake Tour. On the 9th, we're going to be at Costas all morning, right up till 2 o'clock. We're going to be talking about the Key Bridge and the Peninsula. I don't want to say I'm an expert on all things East Side. I'm certainly not an expert on bridges, but I am an expert on the history of things on the East Side. And I do remember life before the bridge, and now we have life after the bridge and the dredging and all that stuff. We'll be talking about that at Costas on the 9th. On the 12th, we'll be at Fadley's. I'm wearing my Fadley shirt, established in 1887, but moved into the new Lexington Market as of opening day last week. I had my first Fadley's crab cake in the new location, and I'm telling you, it's all new equipment, all new fryers. They're telling me about this drainage system they have, and I will say this, it was the best Fadley's crab cake I've ever had. I told Damie after my second bite, I'm like, oh my God, your food tastes better here. She's like, it's all new equipment, and it's all timed, and it's all perfect, and I'm like, let's get down to Fadley. So Luke and I'll be there from 2 until 3 live. I'll be there 2 to 5 live on the 12th. And then every Friday. And Ed Frankovic, you're invited. Every Friday from 2 until 5, we'll be there giving away Maryland Lottery tickets and having some fun. I am Nestor. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore. We never stop talking Baltimore positive.